Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. House Bill 1057 continues to lead headlines across the state. Legislation creating a so-called modified red flag law has also been filed in the state Senate. And the Board of Regents director is pushing a bill creating need-based scholarships. The Dakota Political Junkies will touch on these topics and more this morning. We welcome the University of South Dakota Associate Professor of Political Science, Mike Card. He's joining us from our studio in the USD campus in Vermilion. Welcome back, Mike.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
And joining us by phone, Madison Daily Leader publisher John Hunter. Good to have you with us, John.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks for asking.
Let's start with red flag laws and this bill that, you know, there's several, Seth Tupper, SDPB Seth Tupper also just filed a piece on several pro-gun bills filed this year so far. Debate on Senate Bill 51, which is about county employees carrying guns to other weapons into county courthouses. So this is a big picture about gun legislation, but this specific bill is one that is a restriction instead of an expansion of gun rights. And it deals with red flag laws, which is a challenge in South Dakota for sure. John Hunter, what do you sort of see in this red flag law that Arthur Rush is saying, you know, it's modified. Now look at the content of it before you react to what you, you know, might initially think.
Well, you're right, Lori. It is a dichotomy where you have, you know, generally in South Dakota, pro-gun, where we're now allowing guns to a limited degree in the state capitol building. You know, legislators can have guns at their desks, and so and this one then is the other way around. And the red flag idea is that if a person has not yet committed a crime but is determined that they would be at risk to either others or themselves, that officers would have the ability to take those weapons away. And Art Rush is trying to be reasonable about this. He calls it modified. He thinks he's trying to, you know, I mean, he's getting some things from other states and think watering down things a little bit. I think it's a really, in my opinion, a good faith effort to try to find something in the middle. As you know, gun laws of all sorts raise emotions and opinions, and it's very strong. It's hard to get all sorts of things passed. So I do admire the effort in trying to get something reasonable. We don't know if it'll pass, but Art is trying.
Right, and what he's saying is the modified part of this is that he's included a court process to make sure that red flag follows due process you know, maybe other states haven't addressed. Mike Card, what are your thoughts on sort of this desire to find a compromise that protects people but also protects rights?
Well, it, even in our language, to call them red flag laws draws attention to it. In a sense, it's really risk-based gun removal. It does require a court to find clear and convincing evidence that the person and their weapons present a clear danger to themselves and others, and that person, the judge has to find that person shouldn't be in possession of guns. We don't know if it'll pass. We do know that the National Rifle Association's Institute for Legislative Action release on, I believe it's last year, about this time, said that they might favor emergency risk protection orders under certain conditions. I don't know if these conditions would meet their approval now, and given that it's an election year, whether their standard has increased Senator Rush is trying to provide more protections for individuals and their liberties, as well as protections for the society as a whole.
And this is one of the interesting things, John Hunter. I know you've been on the South Dakota Focus program before at the year-end wrap-up. You and I were on a panel together. And this last year when I was on that panel, I can't remember, I think it was KSFY's Brian Allen, who talked about mass shootings and, you know, said virtually nothing has been done. And I was wondering, you know, is that really true in South Dakota? Because the people who, you know, people are talking about it. We did the mental health task force is over the summer. The legislature was interested in that. You have this legislation. You have what many people would say, you know, is addressing this idea of a gun-free zone and whether that's a way to prevent mass shootings or to encourage them. I think we are having the conversation in South Dakota, just maybe not in a way that is a sweeping ban on anything. What are your thoughts on that, John? Do you think we're doing nothing, or do you think we're actually kind of, you know, doing a fair amount?
Well, Lori, I think you articulated it correctly, and that is the there is action and there is discussion on these things. Remember that gun violence in America is a huge problem. You look at all sorts of other, compare ourselves to other countries, do we have more of this problem than others? The trick is that people have just kind of opposite 180-degree different solutions for that. One is more guns. If you get more guns, then the bad guys aren't the only ones with the guns, and then the other ones who are saying fewer guns. And I'm not, we just, right. We have strong opinions on both sides, and so, but I think if there is something to feel good about, that is, I think virtually everyone wants to achieve the same goal. We're not trying to get two different goals here. The goal is to reduce mass shootings and gun violence. The solutions we don't have yet, but at least people want to address that, recognize the problem, want to do something about it, and now we're trying to figure out what it is. But yeah, I think the discussion is on, and I know that's a common theme in your in the moment, is have this discussion, and if you can start to talk about it, solutions may appear.
Right. I remember recently thinking, when was the last time we had a gun safety conversation? And I think I saw out in Rapid City one or two billboards that talked about gun safety. When was the last time we talked about that? So there's so much to have, you know, unfolding in the conversation. It's ongoing, and Seth Tupper's story is also online.
I may sneak in, yeah. Lori, on that exact same thing there, I just got to bring up a story for Madison. They do have, there's a fellow staffer here at the Daily Leader whose two young sons participate each winter in the shooting sports activities. And they're modestly young. I'm saying, you know, kind of let's maybe 8 and 11 or something like that. And they learn all that kind of how to handle, how to store, how to do all those kind of things with various firearms, and it's designed to be kind of the beginning of a hunting thing, but they also work with pistols, and they work with, you know, law enforcement and so forth. It's a great deal. Those guys, those young men know more about gun safety than most adults do. I'd love to see that program, and although a lot of people aren't going to be interested, I'm not a gun user, or, you know, so it wouldn't interest me, but I think a lot of people could benefit from that.
And sometimes it's just overcoming the fear, you know, and the panic of thinking, you know, that this gun is one thing. You know, you can build up this sort of boogeyman in your mind if you never have any contact with a firearm. And Jonathan Ellison and I talked about that in the show once, just both being former military people. You spent a lot of time with weapons, and you know what they are and what they aren't. And that makes a huge difference just to talk about it. Well, let's
right.
hope.
And storage, and, you know, I mean, and safeties and ammunition. I mean, there's a lot of things to learn.
Right. Let's talk about House Bill 1057, because this is something we did a program on yesterday about gender-affirming health care, what it is and what it isn't. And it's another one of those topics that really, gets people nervous or angry or, impassioned in one way or the other. Mike Card, what are you sort of seeing in this conversation that's new? Any insight? Is this just the same recycled argument?
Well, it seems to be on a slightly different topic as opposed to prior years where we've had LGBTQ issues. This one appears to be more focused on transgender individuals and especially youth. And on the one hand, you might argue that this is a set of out-of-state interests that have influenced a South Dakota legislator to see a need or prevent a problem from occurring in South Dakota. And your speaker on your program yesterday noted that they seem to be talking past each other, that what the program of medical interventions that's described in the bill or seemingly outlined in the bill isn't how the process actually works to deal with individuals who have some degree of gender dysphoria.
Right. I had to get a dictionary out when I read the text of that bill to look up what those procedures even were. John Hunter, there's another bill Phil Jensen introduced, Senate Bill 88, which says that school counselors and social workers and psychologists have to tell a parent if a student comes to them and talks about any kind of, gender identification issues or indications of self-harm. Well, they're already mandatory reporters for self-harm. So basically, it seems like it's legislation to say, as a parent, we have a right to know if our child comes to a school counselor and says, you know, I'm having some issues with that. Again, does this seem like a part of a pattern to you, John Hunter? What's going on?
Well, the first people I think about in that are the counselors themselves, and they are being put in a challenging situation. As we know, being a school counselor can be stressful enough as it is, because they're often dealing with challenges that children bring to school from home or have conflicts at school. They also involve, could be adult authorities at school. There's a lot of different things, and I admire so many school counselors for the work that they do. But we have seen circumstances where the counselor didn't notify the right thing at the right time or something like that, and they have gotten in trouble and lost their jobs and so forth. As I think about this particular bill, good intentions. You hope it doesn't put further burdens on counselors or cause people not to enter that field, because we need them and we want good ones. So, I don't know how it's going to go. Intentions are good. You never really want to punish or make that job so challenging and legally hard that you discourage people from entering the field.
Right. When you talk about intentions, I know the ACLU is, of course, spoken out about against Senate Bill 88, and one of their points is always, that a child who has issues with gender identity is already isolated socially in this state, politically, and now if they know that they can't talk to even a trusted adult at school, if they're not getting any kind of support at home, it further isolates, and that suicide rate is, 40%, 60%, depending on what study you're looking at. Mike Carr, talk a little bit, if you will, about isolation and parents' right to understand what's happening with their kids and counselors' rights to, to do their job, and how we balance all these legislatively.
Well, it is a tough issue to deal with, because you've got the counselors, the social workers, the school psychologists who are working under the public interest, and so they are mandatory reporters for suicide ideation as well as a few other issues. You've got the parents, and you have the child, and then we have the rest of society that has an interest in these children growing up to be productive adults in our society, and it seems that while I certainly agree with what John said, that this is an idea that has good intentions, it's just how do we maintain the child's ability to speak their mind and to have someone that they can speak with. We know that some children are actually thrown out of their homes if they identify themselves as being LGBTQ. As well as possibly transgender. I don't know of any individuals who have been thrown out for that, but that creates other problems that they have, and certainly that's a level of isolation, being homeless and trying to find a place to live and a way to support yourself as a youth. That's the dangerous situation, and what other issues might befall that person, including taking their own life or attempting to. Again, your speaker yesterday noted that the attempts to mutilate themselves because they don't see what they identify with. It seems a true Hobbesian dilemma, that there's no good answer that's appeared to us yet. It may be again the case that we have to have a public figure, but I know that having more government intervention in what should be family issues or could be family issues doesn't seem to solve the problem either.
When you say good intentions, John Hunter, this legislation with good intentions, can you expand on what you mean by that? Because I think some people are struggling with the intentions of this bill and see it really as an intention to discriminate.
I understand, and I understand the question. I think the intention is a little bit back to what Mike was talking about, though, that you'd like to hope that most challenges can be resolved at the family level rather than in a government or at a school level. where the family can, and I think well-meaning parents, if they knew their child was struggling with something, would like to help. Now, that's, you can't generalize about parents at any more than you can generalize about students or generalize about counselors. So the idea is that if the family maybe knew something, that they could help in some way. But I understand, too, some people, and again, maybe saying what do they call it with the priest, the kind of the sanctity of the confessional,
sure.
You know, that it's not supposed to leave. If someone trusts their counselor but doesn't trust their parents, how does that work? So let me just tie that in, John, if I could.
Because 1057, one of the criticisms about it is that it's not trusting parents to have these conversations about what kind of care is appropriate for their child. 88 is sort of saying, trust the parents to, you know, you got to tell the parents something's going on. So you might have somebody who is opposed to one and supportive of the other. Interesting partnerships, when you look at the things that we agree on, sometimes can be in contradiction with what somebody might expect if you're looking at it from that viewpoint, through that lens.
Agreed. The challenge is that you're trying to put a law together that, or both those laws, that apply to people as a whole, and we have so many individual circumstances that are different from all others. I mean, it's, you know, again, good parents, bad parents, good counselors, bad counselors. And those are stronger terms than I meant, but
right.
That you have all sorts of, and communication issues and family relationships and new family relationships. There's all sorts of factors in there. It's hard to write laws about anything in this, in that, given that broad range of circumstances.
Mm. All right, let's move on and talk about needs-based scholarships for state students.
Can I stop us just a second
go ahead,
back?
Yeah.
Perhaps what we do need is to, instead of saying this must be revealed, is to name someone who could be the trusted, you know, such as we have, for lack of, this may not be the right analogy, drop-off zones for children who would be abandoned at firehouses, hospitals, clinics, and places like that. We might be able to create a safe zone so that the child, adolescent, can speak with someone about these sorts of issues and achieve or receive help. You know, the difficulty then becomes, how do you pay for it outside a school setting? How do you make sure, again, that everybody's safe? But it seems that that's one way out, is to specify someone who can talk about these issues with the child.
Fascinating. And you know, I mentioned yesterday in our conversation that I'm acutely aware every time we have these conversations on the radio, who is listening and the damage that might be done by words. And I guess we have these conversations anyway, because I think it's so important to talk about it and to acknowledge that this can be confusing for people. I don't think it is a radical thing that people are curious, that they have questions, and some of those questions in this case are deeply personal, and that it's okay to talk about some of those things. That's, I guess, one of my philosophies for doing the show, whether that...
Well, yeah. And there are all sorts of different sets of ears. I kind of add into the counselors and the healthcare professionals, the pastors and others who have counseling skills and maybe a different angle, but the word you brought up is confusing, and that's the challenge. It's confusing for, it could be confusing for the counselor, could be confusing for the student, could be confusing for the parent. They're all trying to do this, and that's why, you know, you talk about conversations, that if you can maybe talk about these things, it appears as though, at least a little bit, if those are kind of all bottled up inside, that it gets harder to resolve those things.
Yeah, I've had so many people off air come up to me and say, and almost whisper, like, you know, I want to be supportive, but I don't understand what it means. You know, that simply having the question, I want to be kind, but I don't know what I'm being kind about, because I'm confused. It's complicated. I do want to talk about needs-based scholarship for state students, because this is something that has not been successful in the past. But as we look at specifically brain drain, Mike Card, let's start with you, because this is Senate Bill 72, and it is supported by the Board of Regents, saying that it's time for us to have a needs-based scholarship in South Dakota. Explain to people, Mike Card, what that means.
Well, I first have to give my disclaimer because I'm an employee of the Board of Regents and the University of South Dakota that the opinions I'm going to express are my own and not necessarily those of the board or the University of South Dakota.
Duly noted.
Well done.
You know, higher education has and is becoming largely unaffordable. Technical education is almost unaffordable. And yet we know that given the economic situation over the past 10 years since the Great Recession, as it's often called, indicates that those with some degree of post-secondary education are less likely to be laid off or more likely to have higher lifetime earnings than those who don't. And so we have a real push for individuals to pursue post-secondary education. Yet our wages in South Dakota don't always support what it costs to provide that higher education in South Dakota. So we find people perhaps leaving the state to pursue opportunities. Some join the military to pursue training and education and to get access to GI bills where they can afford to pay. Whether they come back or not is part of the issue. The need-based aid is there are lots of people in South Dakota who cannot afford post-secondary education. In a sense, it's financial inaccessibility that I believe the Board of Regents are trying to address.
John Hunter, any thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, I think Mike's very thoughtful about this. Those are challenges, and the affordability of college education is a big part of that. But the needs base, and just to clarify that just a little bit, the idea is that not necessarily all people who can't afford it, but students that could normally earn admission or earn, could have a broad chance of success at the university level, meeting certain admissions requirements and so forth, right, but can't afford. That's the crack in the sidewalk that we're losing.
Right.
And you mentioned the brain
drain. It's an ACT of at least 22 and a high school grade point average of 3.0 and above. So those are the
right
kids we're talking about who qualify for a Pell Grant. So they're, Pell Grant eligible from families that are not, wealthy enough to send them.
Right. And so, and we recognize that even for all strata, their college education can be a challenge financially and private and public schools. So it's a sound idea, everything about it, except then that somehow that money has to come in, and we have to either take that from other programs or from in additional taxes or wherever that thing. So it's a balance that you have to strike. Is that more important than reducing tuition for all students? Which one is better? And so.
Right.
Again, a great idea. You'd love to see, and it'd be neat if we walked down the street and found some extra money that could be used for that. It would be a great return on investment.
Yeah. As a parent with a child in college, let me tell you, those out-of-state schools came
right
in
checked.
A lot more affordable than the in-state schools. And there were places in-state that just could not compete with the ones from out-of-state who were recruiting. So it's a very real conversation that needs to be had. I want to close with the ban on plastic bags and the ban on the ban. This is legislation that is saying, no one in municipality or city should be allowed to ban plastics. And it brings up some really interesting arguments in Pierre, including one that says, hey, throwing plastic in the river might not be that big of a deal because fish use it for habitat. And John Hunter just reminded me when Representative Monroe said that of one of my relatives when we used to drive on the highway and she would throw her empty cigarette packages out the window. And the kids in the car would be like, you can't do that. And she'd say, it's good. The birds will use it for nesting. And that was her excuse for littering. Interesting arguments come up when you talk about plastic. John Hunter, where do you want to start?
Well, I kind of figured you were heading for this one. That's the kind of thing that you like chatting about. So the quote of Mr. Monroe was that he's, I think, glad to see plastic coffee cans dropped in the river because they serve as habitat.
For bait fish, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Maybe not the strongest argument of the day.
Well, I'm always surprised, you know, for those people who know about Cleveland, when they tore down their old stadium, it was a big old concrete stadium, they dumped the whole thing in the lake to provide this new reef, and everyone thought that was a good idea. This still seems a little strange to me that you're throwing all this stuff in. I think there are some people who are going to agree with that. Plastic does not degrade or decompose kind of correctly. It's an oil, you know, petroleum-based kind of thing. So it seemed to me that generally that plastic bags in natural habitat is not a good fit in that case. Yeah, we'll get a few more bait fish, I suppose, but I still think it's not quite the right thing to do.
Some of the more pertinent arguments about this are about businesses and the impact that it has on businesses. And Mike Card, the reason I like, as John says, chatting about this is because there's real issues at stake here about pollution and about the impact on an economy, but people get so fired up. I was at the hotel in Rapid City and the people last night, and the people at the bar were asking for extra straws to prove a point. People get excited and passionate about something, and we really just have maybe a minute left, Mike. So any thoughts on why this sort of brings out such strong responses from people about plastics?
Well, it changes your lifestyle. It changes your business supply chain. If you're a small restaurant and you have to try to find straws that many people can figure to be more expensive and find to be less useful than plastic straws.
And, all right, changing
so
the lifestyle, yep.
Forces your life. The other part is
very
it,
quickly,
it's,
yeah.
For some people, a fundamental issue of government. Should the state preempt their cities and counties from being able to enact laws that would do this?
All right, I'm sure we will talk more about this. John Hunter and Mike Card, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lori.
Thanks, John.